What do you think? Did he get him?
Am I hungover?
What?
What? Nah, a little slightly.
We don't know what we're doing here.
Are you kidding me, Mike?
Hey, everybody, it's Dale Jr. Welcome back to another episode of the Dale Jr. Download. This is Dirty Air, and I am obviously not in the studio. Mike is in the Bojangles Studios, you can see.
What's up, man?
I am out on vacation with my family, but excited to talk about everything going on this week. So so we dialed in, we called in, Mike, and there is a lot happening in the sport. Anyways, we since I'm on vacation, Mike, we got a great program that we want to share with our followers. My sister Kelly is going to be introducing a series that we're going to do, and we're going to call this the Business of Motorsports. Often some of the best content that I see out in social media around motorsports is about the cost, the detailed cost, the decisions that need to be made, how that affects the business, and how to run a race team. I've seen great content created by grassroots racers, and it's fascinating, I think, even for me, that knows a lot about the business and how to run a team and how much it costs and all those things. It's still really fascinating to see how people do it and the decisions they make to go to the racetrack. So Kelly's going to be creating a new series called Business Motorsports, and her first guest is Steve Laletta, and this man is the president of 2311. So not only, I guess, are we going to hear Kelly's insight on how our business model works in the Xfinity series, which is really fascinating, but 2311, one of the newer teams, Denny Hamlin comes in and wants to create a business model or a race team that's a little bit different than how he's, you know, seen race teams ran in his career. And Steve's got a unique background with Chip Ganassi and a few other programs, but also how they, you know, how they juggle all the challenges of coming into the sport and becoming competitive on the cup level, how charters work and how they acquire charters and all those things. It's going to be really fascinating stuff, Mike. So pretty exciting. That's going to be a series, so it'll be reoccurring throughout the year. Am I right?
That's right. We'll do that. Start it tomorrow. But I've got to tell you, Dale, we miss you. You're gone, and we'll do this series, you know, started off with Steve Laletta and Kelly while you're gone. But man, you leave and the world sort of unravels around here. I mean, I'm going to tell you something. I don't know if we need our leader back or what, but you know, Denny's gone off and made admissions on his podcast. You know, Junior Motorsports found each other like magnets again over the weekend. I mean, what's going on here?
Yeah, that was tough to see on Saturday. And all my friends are asking me how do you manage that, or what do you do about that? And, you know, I haven't had a chance to really sit down and talk to some of the drivers, so I wouldn't want to sit on here and this be the first thing to hear out of my mouth over what happened Saturday. But, you know, you definitely want your guys to race each other a little less aggressively than they might race everyone else, and obviously our drivers, you know, often get into pretty tough battles with each other, and we've seen it before. And sometimes Mike, it's okay, and sometimes, you know, it's not. So you just, it's a balance. You don't, you know, there was a Charlotte race last year with Josh Berry and Justin Allgaier, and they beat on each other and lean on each other. Josh wins the race, but Justin cut a tire down, and, you know, you kind of want to see them run 1-2 if they can. And, you know, but they were just, you know, it's, if they can get out and say, hey man, I'm fine with that, I'm good with how you race me, it's kind of something they have to work out between themselves. As much as I'd like to step in there and say, hey Sam, you know, don't run into Josh, or, you know, hey, you know, hey guys, you know, that's kind of, what are we doing here? Right. I mean, you want to do that, but at the same time, the drivers have a responsibility to talk to each other and communicate with each other how they want to be raced and how they don't want to be raced. There was some competition meetings this week as well at the shop where they go through it all. But, And they all took ownership of it. You know, Sam's like, hey, it was my bad. I don't know what was going on. I don't know why I did that. He owned it.
Yeah.
And I feel like that Justin and Brandon Jones had an understanding about how their situation went down late in the race. But I'll be honest with you, man, it was frustrating to see our cars not perform better, you know. And as a company, the new rule change in the back of the cars, we had that figured out. NASCAR changed the left side trailing arm, and we used to run a shorter trailing arm on the left side. And NASCAR made everybody go to the same size, same length trailing arm that you have on the right side. So now the car, and it takes away a lot of parts and pieces that can be manipulated, right, to create skew in the car. And so the rumor is that we were at Pocono last year, and there's a camera shot at turn one, but the car is coming at you down the front straightaway. And I believe somebody up in the top of the tower at NASCAR down in Daytona did not like the way the cars were skewed coming down the straightaway and said, I want to get rid of that. The cars don't need to be going crooked down a straightaway. And it just looked funny, which I agree, but it was definitely going to take away some of our advantage from what we had last year. And so the rule changes were made, and now we've got to find some speed. Yeah. You know, our cars are quick at times, but it's certainly really leveled the playing field for us and made things a little more difficult. But we just got to work hard, you know. Mm-hmm. I knew it was going to be tough to repeat what we did last year. But the Denny Hamlin thing, man, I was really surprised by that.
Me and you both.
I mean, everybody was surprised by that. And I think that this is this would be interesting. I think, you know, I'm not so much curious as to what happens on the racetrack or what kind of penalties might come down on Denny or whatever. I'm just curious to watch him navigate this new position as a content creator. And I know probably nobody else cares about that, but when he goes back into his podcast next week, right, and going forward, he talks about, hey, as long as I got this microphone, I'm going to do this. I'm going to say this. Or until Ross gets a microphone, right? He can say whatever he wants, right, when he gets his own microphone. So I'm interested to see kind of how Denny ebbs and flows in his content and what he might say next week about whatever repercussions come from that admission.
Yeah.
And he might have, which I like Denny being honest on his show. And I know a lot of people like it and a lot of people don't like it, right? A lot of people have different opinions about what they're seeing from Denny in his podcast. But I think it's great that he's pretty much transparent and probably too honest. But he could have just said, you know, I was out of control and I wasn't looking to save him. Because a lot of times when you're on the inside of somebody, and you get loose or you're out of control or you're sliding up the racetrack, you can spin yourself out, you know, and the guy on the outside just carries on. You can turn yourself around. I was at, so Denny had that option, right, to just spin himself and do everything he could to avoid hitting any car on his outside, which happened to be Ross. But he said, you know what, since it's Ross, I'm gonna correct to the right, and I'm going to door him, and we're going into the fence. And I think he could have maybe worded it that way. I don't think that he went, you know, I don't think that he was like, here's my chance to ruin his race. I think that he thought, I'm sliding up the track. I'm going to lose all these spots because I'm out of control.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then my car back up, and I'm just going to use him as a way to keep me from wrecking. You know, I was racing at Myrtle Beach in the 90s. And I used to try to pass the same guy, and 2 weeks in a row, I spun out underneath him. I get underneath him down a straightaway, and he was coming to the bottom, and he would cut you off. His name was Ray. And every time you got under him, this guy would act like you weren't there. And you knew it. And he'd tell you, look, I'm coming down. If you want the spot, you're going to have to drive through me. It was the craziest thing. I never knew anybody that ever raced like that. But you'd get underneath him, and he'd just turn left into the corner. Like you weren't there. 2 weeks in a row, I spun out underneath this guy because he'd come down and I'd turn the wheel and get all loose and out of control and spin out. And I come home and Dad's like, hey, man, what happened this weekend? I said, man, I got into that guy again. And I spun out. And he goes, next time you're underneath him and he comes down the track, just slam on the brakes, clench your front tires and lock your car into the track and hold the wheel straight, spin him out. I was like, you sure? He's like, yeah. And so literally like the next race, that's what happened. Got underneath him. He came down the track. And so, I mean, that's kind of what Denny had to do. He had a choice of spinning himself out or further ruining his race, but doing it alone or trying to correct into the car on the outside. You know, he knew he was going to lose spots anyways, but he's going to take somebody with him. But that was fascinating.
Yeah.
That was fascinating that he would be, kind of wonder sometimes what he's thinking. There's a bigger message or a bigger, he got on that podcast and admitted that. Because he's got some plan, right? He's got something, and he's got some plan how this is going to work out in his head.
I think so.
Where he's going with all that.
Yeah, I don't think Denny gets careless with his comments, even though it may seem like that. I think that he knows what he's doing, and so like none of this stuff. You know, a friend of ours texted me this morning. He said it's almost like Denny was daring NASCAR to do something about it. Like, and I'm like, that's interesting. I don't know that. I don't know.
I don't think that.
I wouldn't go that far, but I do think he. He didn't. I don't think he misspoke. I think he could have.
I think Ross.
What's that?
I said I don't know if he's daring NASCAR so much as he's daring Ross.
Well, listen. If you listen to the podcast, the story ends with them having a truce. It does.
I wonder if Ross will feel like that.
Well, they had a conversation after the race. They had a conversation after the race, and Ross says to Denny, "I guess I deserved that one, didn't I?" And Denny says, "Yes." So this is the thing. I think you're right. I think that Denny could have framed this up better. The way he framed it up was that I was going to have a bad day, and I was, by God, bringing somebody with me. I wasn't going alone to my bad day. I was going to bring Ross with me because damn him. That's how he framed it up. What seemed to be the case, though, is that they were racing hard, and Denny goes back to feeling disrespected by Ross. And he says that it all goes back to a respect thing. He's trying to get, he says that he told Ross, I just don't know why you're disrespecting when you're driving. You're just so disrespectful. And so they have this conversation and they have a truce. It's what he says. He goes, we say, neither one of us want this to continue. Let's race each other exactly how we want to race each other from this day forward. This is happening over the weekend. And this is what he also says in the podcast. This is the part that's not getting any airplay. The part where Ross says, I think I deserve that. And the part where Denny and him reach a truce and say, let's race each other hard, but let's not race each other disrespectfully. Hey everyone, Dirty Mo Media President Mike Davis here. Excited to tell you about one of our newest sponsors at Dirty Mo, Airbnb. The irony here is that Airbnb is new to Dirty Mo Media, but Dirty Mo Media is not new to Airbnb. It has been accommodating us for years. And if you are a race fan, and I think you are, you know why. I mean, you've booked hotels during a race weekend. The prices are insane. You're stuck with these unreasonable multi-night minimums. Whereas Airbnb, you got many choices all within proximity, and it ends up being way more affordable. Now, I'm not only a frequent Airbnb guest, but my wife and I are also Airbnb hosts. And you should be too. We've been doing it for years. I'll tell you why. We have an investment property that we realized it could be earning additional income through Airbnb. You don't have to have an investment property to do that. You could just find extra space in your home. That works too. It all could be making you some extra cash. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
NASCAR history and heritage come alive at the NASCAR Hall of Fame. Celebrate my fellow inductees Donnie Allison, Jimmy Johnson, and Chad Knaus with their class of 2024 artifacts enshrined in the Hall of Honor. Don't miss the Ford Performance Showcase. It's a new Inside NASCAR exhibit that showcases the Ford Mustang's next-gen car through its design and innovation. The latest edition of Glory Road explores over 75 years of racing history with its cool 33-degree banking and 19 cars on display. On Mondays and Fridays, there's guided tours that take you behind the scenes with incredible stories and access to a NASCAR Hall of Fame insider. Or you can explore the hall at your own pace with the new mobile hub. It's a digital experience. get behind the wheel of a realistic iRacing simulator, or you can learn how fast-paced pit stops work with the Pit Crew Challenge. From the legends who shaped the sport to the new heroes earning a spot in the record books, the NASCAR Hall of Fame delivers an unforgettable experience. Book your visit to the Hall today at NASCARHall.com.
I got a bunch of reactions here. First and foremost, I think we should probably just say the obvious, and that is that as we record this on a Tuesday morning, we don't know if there's going to be, you know, a penalty or a fine. We just know that NASCAR has said that they listen to the podcast and that they may consider penalties. But as we record this right now, we don't know what that would be. Maybe it comes out later today. Maybe it doesn't. Who knows? But I saw that Elton Sawyer got on Sirius XM this morning and was saying, we've heard the podcast and they are considering, you know, fines. And listen, this wouldn't be the first time Denny's been penalized for something, but or fined for something, but it'd be interesting to see what he says. And I mean,
well, I just think that they need to call Denny and they need to talk to him about really what went down. I understand Denny went on his show and said what he said, but and I'm sure NASCAR probably is calling Denny and saying, hey man, this is some, you know, they might not call him and ask his side of events, right? They might just call him and tell him what they're going to do. But as far as the penalty, but
yeah,
man, I mean, this happens. This happens every race. Nobody gets out and admits it. Me and Denny were racing at Phoenix or Michigan one year, and the Toyotas were terrible. They didn't have any power. And I was trying to pass Denny in turn 3 and 4. And if I didn't clear him and get in line, if you remember how, you know, Michigan races go, if you got a guy on your outside off the 4, they all get lined up and train you down the front straightaway and you lose a bunch of spots. Well, I was really fast and all the Hendrick cars were quick. And Denny was, I'm going by Denny. I know it. I'm going to pass him. He's slow. All their cars were terrible. And he hangs on my right rear quarter panel off of turn 4. And I was like, no, sir. And I just came up the track and fenced him in off of 4. I was like, not going to hang on my right rear quarter panel and cost me 4 or 5 spots down the front straightaway when you know I'm damn quicker than you. We come off, you know, I finished top 5 and I think he finished 5th. I finished 4th or 3rd. We parked on pit road and everybody gets out. And Denny's like, dude, what the hell? And I was like, well, I didn't want you hanging on my quarter panel, man. You were going to drag me down the straightaway and side draft me and slow me down and cost me a spot or two. And I wasn't going to let that happen. And he said, yeah, but you just ran me into the fence like I wasn't there. And I said, I figured that's what you'd have done if you was me. And he goes, you don't know me like that. I wouldn't do that. You're wrong. And so, I mean, these kind of things happen every race where, I mean, how many times has everybody that's drove a race car been drove into the fence off the corner because the guy disrespected you or just didn't want to get raced down the next straightaway, wanted to spot.
Yeah, caught you in a moment where you didn't care. And so you did. We all have those moments, and certainly they happen on the racetrack. You're like, not today, yeah. Not today.
And so I think Denny was overstating it a little bit about, man, I did this. I intentionally thought, you know, I'm gonna wreck him. I think Denny was overstating it a little bit. I think Denny thought, you know what, I'm gonna hit him and say, you know, and get my car straightened out, and it's gonna cost us both. We're both going backwards, and I don't care because it's Ross, and I've had problems with him. So he probably would have took a little better care of somebody else, but since it was Ross, he's like, you know what, I'm heading up the racetrack, and I'm gonna use him up.
That's right,
because we're out of control.
I'll tell you this much. Last year, we spent a pretty good long episode debating Denny and whether he would wreck somebody intentionally or whether he wrecked Ross. And I boldly stated that Denny's all talk and he's not going to back it up. Well, I stand corrected. He's actually quite the opposite. He's backing up his talk almost to a fault.
the part that was the strangest to me was how he kept hitting him down the back straightaway and through turn 3 and 4 coming to the finish.
Right.
Like he, you know, used him up, slid him up the track, both of them lose a lot of spots. Did Ross brake check him off the 4? I don't know what was going on there.
I think he did.
Because I know Denny ran into him.
Yeah.
Denny throttled up, hit him, right? But Ross was not throttled up down the straightaway, right? I don't know exactly what was going on, but why Denny kept on running into him more and more. You know, was he really wanting to spin him out? Was he hoping that he would turn him around?
Yeah.
He was getting aggressive there. But
I'd caution everybody. You know, a lot of people are talking about this today, and there's one thing. Listen, I like the Ross versus Denny. I don't want them to make up. I don't want them to race respectfully. As a fan, it's one of the few things I'm clinging on to when I watch these races every week. That there's a rivalry on the racetrack that we can kind of, even if they're in ninth and 10th or wherever they are on the track, if they're near each other, you notice. I don't know of anybody else like that on the track. And there's not even a close second, frankly. So everybody can have their opinion about Denny and Ross and whether or not, but I appreciate the fact that he's using, you know, a platform to be honest. I also, I would be careful to discourage these drivers from, you know, going back into a shell. You know, honesty and transparency is something, it's a gift, it's a privilege that we get to enjoy. You just don't want to make people feel like, you know, it's too problematic for them to be that way. And Denny is certainly gives us, you know, an honest and transparent take every week. In fact, he had a lot of things on this podcast unrelated to the Ross incident that I thought were very, very interesting. One is about, he went on a rant about this short track package. I don't know if I'd call it a rant. It wasn't like he was just, you know, really explaining. And Jared Allen asked some really good questions about the short track package. Denny had an interesting take about that. He also clarified some stuff about the Chase Elliott, you know, the injury, as that this is a conversation that goes on a couple weeks. So, you know, these are the types of candor that we appreciate from our NASCAR, regardless of whether they have a podcast or not, whether regardless of whether they're a Dirty Mo Media content creator for us. Just this is kind of candor that not everybody's willing to do, and Denny's one of them, and so I appreciate that. And you know, if he gets fined for this or penalized in some way, I kind of regret that, frankly, because you know, but if he does get penalized, it's not because of a podcast; it's because of what he did on a racetrack and not a podcast. If NASCAR ever tried to go penalize somebody for something they said on a podcast, well, that would be crossing a line, in my opinion. You know, that's affecting people's ability to, you know, free speech or, you know, working in the media. But I don't think that's what's happening here. I think there was a precedent set, you know, with Bubba last year on wrecking someone intentionally. And then you've got a guy that's saying, you know, it's admitting it. Now, Dale, what is your opinion on, is it apples and apples with Bubba Wallace's situation from last year? I mean, that was clearly a situation that happened on a track, whereas now you've got Denny just coming, you know, once they're back home admitting something. Is it the same?
No, because there's some severity to what happened last year with Bubba, the hits and the contact that cars made with each other. You could look at it like the intent to go crash somebody is the same no matter what the result is.
Right.
So should be a similar, you know, penalty across the board. If you're trying to do it, you're as guilty as the guy that succeeded. But NASCAR often looks at the severity of the moment and reacts based on, you know, how damning it was or how much the repercussion was for everybody else involved. So they often, where I would be like, hey man, let's make it clear. One penalty for any kind of intentional or intent to crash a car, it's one penalty for everybody, right? One size fits all. That's kind of how I do it because I like to simplify things. But NASCAR's often will change the monetary part of a fine or whatever, raise it, lower it, depending upon how badly it might have affected the day how big the moment was.
The Dale Jr. Download is brought to you by ZipRecruiter.
You going to any concerts this summer, man?
I am. I'm seeing a concert in June. Hardy and Kit Moore.
Love Hardy.
In Charlotte. I was so stressed getting the tickets. I'm going to be front row. I'm in the pit. When these tickets go out, man, I am online as soon as tickets open. I don't want to miss a thing.
Yeah, you know, you got to act quick.
Yes.
And when you want the best, you have to act quickly or someone else will get it instead. It's like if you're hiring for a business, you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. Mm. So what's the best way to do that? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast, and right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Dale Jr.
ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/Dale Jr. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/Dale Jr. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
One of the things that we're going to be watching in terms of penalties is a possible penalty coming down to Hendrick Motorsports. And I didn't hear that the colleague cars were involved in this as well, but the louvers on the hoods of all of those cars were confiscated. Nobody really knows exactly what was going on, what NASCAR saw to make them want to take these and get a good look at them. But all 4 Hendrick cars and the colleague cars had theirs confiscated. Denny said on his show that he thinks this will be the biggest fine in the history of the sport in terms of fining an organization. Obviously, modifying any kind of part for this car is a massive no-no, but I am hesitant to assume that that's what happened. And until we hear, you know, exactly what's going on and why NASCAR wanted to take a look at these, I'm not going to assume that there'll be a fine. But it's interesting, you know, to see. I think, you know, with this car, NASCAR has to react really stiffly when it comes to teams trying to manipulate any of the parts, because that's the whole basis around this car. It's like a kit car. Everybody has the same stuff. It's a level playing field. Whereas for, you know, 50 years, we took cars and tried to make them better and modify them and change and mold them in all sorts of ways. And we had tons of freedom to do that. And there's no longer freedom, you know, to make those adjustments or make things better. Even if you see something the way you might be able to make it safer, right? You're not allowed to really manipulate any of the stuff that we have today. So, we'll just have to see what comes from this, but I'm eager for some updates on what's going on and why they took those parts.
You didn't see this, but as we were starting our show, I saw Greg Ives walking through the shop, and so we waved him in here. He actually came into the studio before we got started, and we were kidding with him. We said, "Hey, sit down here and explain to us what's about to come at Hendrick Motorsports and what you did that what your role in this was." Obviously, he said, "No, I decline," and he walked out. But the fact is that it was kind of funny, and I don't know, a coincidence that Greg Ives was walking through here, which, by the way, looking good. Our old buddy, Greg Ives, looking good, having fun. Got a big responsibility over there at Hendrick.
I wonder what everybody thinks about the new short track package this past weekend. My opinion about that is that Phoenix, the racetrack, is going to always race like Phoenix.
That's
and
right.
That it is not even really a short track in a sense. So this I'm reserving my judgment of the short track package and the changes that NASCAR is trying to make until we get to Martinsville and we see what kind of race we have there. See what the drivers have to say about the way the car races at that racetrack. But for me, Phoenix is always kind of put on the same race, no matter what package the cars have had. I was never a massive fan of the reconfiguration of the dog leg. Now, there, at the same time, it's really kind of the most compelling racing or compelling action we see is on the restarts when things get kind of crazy coming through there. But the original Phoenix was a really, really great racetrack and a lot of fun. But what they're racing at, what the track is now is it's a bit different than what we used to race on years and years ago. So, but anyways, I don't know how you make the racing better there. I don't think there's a magical package that will improve on the product at that particular racetrack. I think it's just it's the way the track's shaped and the transitions and the style of asphalt. So it's a kind of tough deal.
I'm with you. I'm a reserving judgment until we get to an actual short track. But I got to be honest. I'm going back to an old argument or my old position on this where, I don't know, I think you got a, you know, frustrated with me a few years ago. But I'm back to this. I'm already sick of having to talk about rules packages, aero packages. I don't think that's what fans relate to. I don't think that we're sitting, you know, and the fact that we're already at this conversation on a week-by-week basis on whether or not the race was good and why we can't pass and all this stuff. It's just an exhausting and old, it's an old argument that just never goes away. And I'm ready for it to either, I'm just ready for us to be able to say, this is what our racing is, or they come up with a, you know, we're talking about resolutions now that's going to take a year. At least Denny is. Denny's saying on his podcast that, look, we knew, you know, the manufacturers are, have a role in this. They're, you know, the limiting the RPMs. And so, we, you know, we all want parity, but then parity is going to present racing like this. You know, if everybody's equal, and you can't go, you certainly got one organization that goes and tries to do their own thing. And then they're going to get their hands slapped big time for doing that. And so it's like, what exactly do we want? I'm ready for us not to make the rules package the conversation every single week. I don't care about it. I know you guys do. And I know the drivers love it. I get it. I get it. I just don't think the casual race fan can relate to it. And so it's, but we're being forced to have to become a student of, you know, the effects of taking off 2 inches of a spoiler and what it does in drag. And none of us know what that feels like because we're not in the race car. And so what we see is on the racetrack or what we see on TV. And it's just, I don't know. I'm just frustrated again about that.
I know what you mean,
But listen, I was in Vegas. I mean, like, I saw it. Right. Okay. The racing's not great now. We're back to the same old thing. And it's frustrating because Vegas is a mile and a half. That's the one track you thought would race well.
Well, I know. And you can't have a resolution or make the changes necessary to create a better product without talking about the details. So, I mean,
that's fair.
You have to suffer, Mike. Sorry, buddy.
Gonna have to suffer, but this is 3, 4, 5 years in the running now, so I'm used to it. But like,
it's not. It's not, Mike. This is 40 years in the running. We've been changing spoilers and valence heights and all wings and all kinds of crazy for years. The package and how the cars race and the draft and all the things this conversation has been going on for a really long time. I don't see it as this new annoying thing like you do. I see it as this long form, you know, low hum that's always part of every season. So it doesn't bother me because it's just always kind of been there. It's always been part of the discussion. And as a former driver, I feel like it's an important conversation because you're pushing, like Denny says, like he says, man, the manufacturers have a responsibility. I think the tire company needs to, you know, own up and try harder or whatever, right? We all have our opinions on where more help could, you know, more help to come from to make the racing better and softer tires that wore out more or whatever, not repaving racetracks, right? Things like that.
Yeah, that's another one. Got a different opinion. Yeah, that's another one. The track repaves. Maybe it has been a conversation for 40 years, Dale, but listen, I got to be honest. I don't remember the conversation always like in seeking a resolution, like it's seeking a something to be fixed. That I don't know that's been going on for 40 years. Maybe we're always, you know, as you get cars and cars evolve and manufacturers are always looking at technology and all that stuff. Yes, you're always tinkering with rules packages and you're always doing that. I get it. That's always been there. But this constant conversation of us looking for something to fix because the racing is bad. Maybe the racing has always been this way, or maybe the racing is not nearly as bad as we make it on a week to week basis because it's not the racing that's changed. It's the people that have changed. Maybe that's it. Maybe we just don't have this, you know, the attention span, but either way, I don't remember us having to talk about rules packages as like, this is something that we need to do to fix this problem. This is a problem. We got to fix it. That's exactly what I'm saying.
Well, I remember, years ago, Dodge coming in and being really fast. And could you imagine, Mike, going out on the racetrack and a Chevrolet having a taller spoiler than a Ford and a Pontiac having a bigger spoiler than anybody else?
Yeah, and upheaval.
But that was the reality of the situation back in the 90s, in the late 90s, which is crazy to think, right? Because you'd never want to go on a racetrack where a guy had more spoiler than you. and had more, you know, what you would imagine would be better arrow. But so I mean, the argument about all, you know, what fixing this or what's right has been there for a long time. In my opinion, we've argued over the restrictor plate package for 20 years plus about what really is the best restrictor plate package to have and why does it have to keep it changing. I think the hope is that we're going to go to Martinsville and we're going to all realize that, man, this is a better package. This is the changes they made to help the cars race at the short tracks and put on a better show are good. And Phoenix is just going to Phoenix.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Well, you might have changed me a little bit. You talked me off the ledge a little bit. I think you make some good points on that. And I'm all for manufacturers duking it out amongst each other and thinking that they're all being treated unfair. I'm all for that.
Yeah.
Hey, Dale, one thing, you know, I wanted to ask you is that, you know, what about Josh? You know, Josh got a top 10. You know, in the car, like, I know you were super proud that he got named in the car and got that ride longer than just 1 week. But dude's already kind of impressing people, isn't he?
Well, I mean, I think that's the kind of run that you would hope that he had last week at Phoenix or Vegas. I think, you know, whatever the problem was with the car that was making things a little challenging for him at Vegas, you know, I was, you know, talked about it last week. I was hoping that he'd get another shot to run the car again. Luckily he did, and they went to Phoenix, and while they didn't have the pace that I think that they wanted to have in the race, I think his averaging running position was around 18th most of the day. And but I kept telling myself, you know, I'm like, what's a good day here for him? I think anywhere in the top 20 would be satisfactory, and anything in the top 15 would be good. And I think that he knows the car should, you know, is a top 10 car, and he's just got to get there as a driver with more laps. And I, you know, I think he hustled at the end, had some great restarts, which is interesting to me because getting aggressive and being great at restarts is kind of one of the last pieces of the puzzle. When you put a guy in a race car for a new race car, a new style of race car, typically the first thing you're going to notice if they're a great driver is the long run speed will be there. That'll be the first thing that shows up. They'll get better on the short run speed. They'll get better at firing off and being able to pull on the track on new tires and run that first lap really fast. That'll come later, right? And then aggressiveness on restarts and pushing yourself in really uncomfortable situations like that usually is one of the last things that it comes into the equation. And so, but he had some really, really good restarts, and that's what got him that top 10 at the end, a couple of late cautions, and he took advantage of it. And he says working with TJ Majors has been doing great. TJ's brought a lot of new information, and they do a ton of prep during the week. I will say that this has really made Josh's week a very big, full week of studying sim work. He's in the sim for the cup car. He's looking at rewatching. He's got to rewatch last year's race on both Xfinity and Cup. They go over that, and they have the competition meetings for both organizations. I mean, so he's got a lot on his plate. And so I'm glad that he was able to get a result that he could be happy with. I think overall, though, that he would have liked to have been faster in the race itself, running maybe, you know, inside the top, you know, 15 for most of the day. If he was racing around 8th to 12th, I think that would be what I would expect him to be able to do. Now he's going to go to a racetrack in Atlanta that's a bit of a, you know, it's a bit of a oddball, the racetrack. You know, you kind of just hammer down and hope for the best. And it'll be hard. To score him, right? Whatever the result is in this one, I don't know how you score that. I guess he just hopes, you know, he gets in there and has another decent result. But it's such an odd racetrack, and the way they race around there is kind of, you know, like a restricted plate race, but it ain't. Anyways, so hopefully he gets a few more tries at it, but eventually everybody wants Chase to get back in the car, and hopefully I told Josh the best thing that he could do is that when Chase comes back, the car and the team are ready to rock.
Yeah.
Chase hops in there and can go win a race right out of the gate. And that would make Chase feel like that Josh took care of things and helped that team continue to progress so that they have a shot at winning a championship this year.
That's right.
And that's kind of the role of a relief guy, you know, is to make sure you don't bring the team down. You don't disrupt their progress. You don't disrupt their ability to find speed in the car. And so while Josh is trying to carve out a role for him in his own career, he's also got that responsibility to maintain throughout this process.
Yeah, man. I'm with you. All right. Let's do some Ask Junior.
All right. Ask Junior for this week. Dale, we miss you. As mentioned before, we've got you on Zoom. And this first question kind of reminds me of when we were podcasting during COVID, and it comes from our friends at IndyCar on NBC. They said you got to run with the IndyCar drivers virtually a few years ago. What was that experience like?
Oh, well, I mean, it was the funniest part about racing with the IndyCar guys during the virtual events was listening to them give each other a hard time. So they were all really chatty on Discord. And so they would call each other out for making a stupid move, or they would get angry and frustrated with each other as if they were out on a real racetrack in real conditions. And so that was the most fascinating part. And they, I don't know, you know, when I raced with the Cup guys, none of them talked at each other.
It's quiet.
They would hardly say anything. They were, you know, everybody was really quiet and not really coming out of their shell, and just, I don't know, the Cup guys are so different. And I'm on there mashing the button. I'm going to talk to everybody. Hey, how's it going? What's going on? Hey, man, move out of the way. You know, whatever. Say whatever you want to say about what's happening. But the Cup guys are real quiet. The IndyCar guys, on the other hand, man, they're jibber-jabbering to each other all race long about this and that and the other. But it was really funny. Will Power, man, he just lets them have it. He calls them all names and cusses at all of them. But anybody that he thinks deserves it, they're going to get it. So that was interesting.
Well, that day he thought they all deserved it because he was not sparing anyone.
He was mad. Yeah.
Sounds like we need an open chat for the NASCAR Cup guys on
Sundays.
Wouldn't
that be amazing?
That'd be pretty wild, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be.
They need some, if you're going to have that, you're going to have to get them to talk. That's the problem. Like,
I've always thought, you know, when they go, hey, they'd say to their spotter, hey, you go tell the, you know, the 24, he ain't getting away with that one next time.
Tell him
and I'm
himself.
Like, just tell him yourself.
Yeah.
So click on the 24 and go, hey, you got one coming.
Yeah.
And now you know.
Yeah.
This second question coming from Davis Warren. What's the worst race car to your memory that you've won a race with in terms of maybe setup, man, or how the race was going?
That's hard to say, man. I mean, every car that you win a race with is pretty much a good race car.
Maybe like a lucky situation. Oh, we shouldn't have won that race type of deal.
Definitely the Xfinity race at Michigan where Carl doored me off of pit road and came into victory lane mad. Robbie Gordon was driving the Junior Motorsports car. Carl was leading. We had a late restart. They're side by side in front of me coming off of turn two. We were all racing our guts out. But I wasn't thinking that I had enough race car to win, and I was kind of hoping that Robbie would win. But we come off of two, and Carl's car was a little loose in front of me, and I just got in the back of him to push him forward and ended up spinning him out. Almost took out Robbie, but we ended up winning the race. So that's one of the ones I didn't think, you know, we were going to win, and we ended up going to victory lane.
It's always a nice feeling.
I do have one that, as far as worst handling car.
All right.
The Busch race that we won the Busch race at Daytona with that pink Menards car, and now it was loose. It was out of control, loose sideways. That's why we won. So I mean, the fact that it handled so badly, it was so hard to drive. It's kind of the reason why we won, because everybody else, on the other hand, was pushing real bad, and they had to lift a lot. And so we just break the draft to drive away from them. I think at one point we had like a 20-second lead or something like that, or 10 or 15-second lead over second place.
And I remember
Carl Edwards running second. Carl was running by himself. He had a break between him and third. And damn, it was the craziest race ever that I'd been a part of at Daytona, with the cars getting spread out like that and the ability to be able to drive away from everybody. But the car was sideways, sideways loose. I almost slapped the wall in turn one a couple of times, with the back just bouncing around, sliding around really bad. But I know it's crazy to me to talk about a winning car that won a race and it handling bad and not being great. But the way it handled was why we won. But it was a handful. It wasn't easy to drive as it looked on TV.
It looked weird.
One thing.
Did it?
He has a hard time
picking up. Well, imagine the pack at Daytona. You got a pack at Daytona, and then you've got the leader out by like 25 car lengths, who's running faster than the pack. That's what it looked like. It looks suspicious.
Yeah.
He still won with the damn thing.
Yeah, I'd say he did. I mean, it was amazing.
Most anybody that ever, the car was loose and it was fun, but it was a handful. So if you just sit down and said, hey, man, how you want your car to drive, you wouldn't want it to drive that way. You'd want it to be easier, stuck, right, and gripped, you know. But I'd rather it be loose than tight, because if you were tight that night, you weren't going anywhere.
How about that? Hey, it's the month of March, and, you know, the tournament's about to get started, March Madness. People are wanting to know, have you filled out a bracket yet?
Yeah, I did. I just filled one out yesterday. I think I'm going to be wrong, but When I do a bracket, I just kind of start one game at a time. Who do I think is going to win between these two teams? And I don't have them. You know, I don't know how other people fill out their brackets, but I don't have my overall winner chosen until I get to that match. And I've got those two teams sitting there in front of me. And I go, okay, these are the two that have made it. Which one's going to win? So I think Memphis and Gonzaga are going to be in the final, and I got Memphis winning.
All right. I guess we'll have to wait and see.
I'd probably be way off. But I filled out the bracket, and that's where I ended up.
Hey, as a Arizona State alum, it was good to see you gave them a few victories there, too. So, you know,
I did, yeah.
How many did you give Alabama?
Yeah. Oh, I'm actually looking at it now. Alabama makes it to, I think, your Elite Eight, I think, if I'm looking at it correctly.
Oh, you've seen his bracket.
I've got it now. Someone just handed it to me.
Yeah, go ahead and tell us you want to tell us our Elite Eight and our Final Four?
Yeah, we can go Elite Eight. So Elite Eight is Alabama, Baylor, Memphis, Kentucky, Kent State, Xavier, UConn, Gonzaga is your Elite Eight. Final Four, Kent State, Gonzaga, Baylor, Memphis. Okay. And then it's Memphis, Gonzaga, your championship game.
There you go.
It's pretty good.
Kent State.
Yeah.
I know. I don't know what that is.
Crazy.
I mean, how can you not? Every year there's that one team that goes way farther than they should. And I feel this like obligation to pick one of those teams, like which one's going to be the one, right? It's, you push a couple of teams a lot further than you think they can go. But that's what's fun about the bracket. That's what's fun about the tournament.
It's always one team you don't even know where it is. You couldn't even guess.
Yeah.
And it's sitting there. There's a school called Drake. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Kent State's beating them, according to Dale. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I got to ask Dale something. I want to ask you. Do you got another question?
Go for it.
Listen, Dale, you're gone. I'm always careful to bring, office politics and stuff into your life. But I'm going to need you to make a rule in here. Okay. This is on the topic of travel etiquette, employee travel etiquette. Now, this is the question. I'm going to try to give it to you as objective as I possibly can. Is it okay for an employee to go on a 3-day trip and they go to the airport and they don't park in long term? They don't even park in daily. They park in hourly, the hourly deck for a 3-day trip.
Wow. That's expensive.
That is expensive. Have you ever heard of anybody doing that for a 3-day trip?
Maybe. I might have done it.
I don't even think you would have done that. What's that?
Who did it?
I'm not saying. I don't want to call them out.
How can you?
That would be unfair. I don't want to call them out. Did y'all agree I teed this up fairly? I teed it up fairly.
Yeah, you didn't give any details.
And I'm just saying, I thought it was an extraordinary move. I thought it was extraordinary. Hourly parking for a 3-day trip, not a day trip, not even a 2-day trip,
a 3-day trip.
what a jerk move.
Thank you. What a jerk. That's all I'm saying. Listen, I wonder what if people are going to see this on Ask Junior, if there is a situation in which that would have been okay.
We are not letting this one. We're not normalizing this. Don't even try to normalize it. It's a terrible move.
It's a terrible move. It's a move.
There's no excuse.
And by the way, then have the nerve to turn in the receipt to the company. I needed Dale to tell me if I was wrong in this. Sorry, I just needed to know.
How much did it cost?
It's like $100. It was $100. I mean, okay, so like I parked in Daly because it was $27. Okay. Well, you've made a ruling. That's what I needed to know.
All right. Andrew, you got any more?
Yeah, I got time for one more. This is actually for both of you guys because I saw this. I saw you quote tweeted it, Dale, on social, I think the other day. A fan recreated the Dirty Mo studio at their house.
Oh, I saw that.
I wanted to get your guys' thoughts on that. That's pretty cool.
It's badass.
Yeah.
That's the biggest compliment I think we've gotten on our business, on our podcast, and on Dirty Mo Media. That's the biggest compliment we've gotten so far.
I agree with that. I also read the Reddit post that the gentleman who built that, and it is, but they did an amazing job. Yeah. Like it literally looks like this studio, right? Yeah. In their house. The wood grain with the black, it looks really good. The table looks good. But I also read the post and it said that it was something that, like, I think his son, who is 10 or 11, has had a rough year, and I don't know why. He didn't elaborate on that, but it's been a rough year for his son. And so, if this was something to do that would even be a bigger compliment for us. And I wish them well, and I certainly hope for the son, whatever would have been, causing a rough year for him. I hope that rectifies itself, and certainly appreciate the gesture that they did.
Yep.
A fan wanted to know if you saw what happened at Hickory Motor Speedway on Saturday night, and what were your thoughts on that?
Yeah, at Hickory Motor Speedway, there was some controversy with Landon Huffman and a few other drivers, Doug Barnes. Doug is, I think, the points leader because he won both races last week, and Landon is last year's champion, track champion. And they both were in twin 40 lap features. In the first 40 lap feature, they wrecked on lap 2 or 3, and they had to spend the rest of the evening repairing their cars to try to race in the second feature. But there is a rule apparently at Hickory, and it's a good rule, that if you only have laps on your tires, you're not allowed to race in the second feature. You have such an unfair advantage on tires over everybody who raced the first feature that you would have you'd easily win the race. So, but there are some ways to help the driver race, right? There's a junk pile of tires that the guys can go pick from so that they can race. But I don't know why all of those avenues weren't sought and why everything wasn't done to be able to try to get Doug and Huffman into the second feature. I think they were given the option to start the second feature and take last place points. But why they weren't eager to try to come up with a solution that allowed all the cars to race was interesting to me. But it'll be interesting to see how they move forward. I think that apparently this rule isn't in a rule book and it isn't often mentioned in the driver's meetings, but the track feels like it's the driver's responsibility to know all of the unwritten rules and unspoken rules, and that it's been discussed in years past at this racetrack that if you don't complete a certain amount of laps in the first feature, you're not allowed to race in the second. And again, it's a good rule. I understand the spirit of the rule, and maybe going forward, it'll be in the rule book. It'll be written, talked about in the driver's meetings every week for all the competitors at Hickory. Hickory had a record crowd for an opening night, the best crowd they've had in probably 20 years. So the track has a lot of great momentum And this story this week is a bit of a stain, a bit of a black eye for that group. But I'm hoping that they can find some resolution with their competitors, because Doug Barnes going there and racing, that's a car that wasn't competing there often last year. That's now going to their racetrack that you want to retain. You don't want to lose your track champion Huffman to going, want to push him to go to other racetracks and race. So it'll be important for Hickory to come to some resolution with the drivers and the teams. But the grassroots stuff's thriving.
Yeah.
The start of the season with the Cars Tour and the ASA series and, all the things that have been going on. It looks like car counts are up this year across the board. At the Cars Tour race, we had over 25 pro late models. That was a big, big field for us. And we had a really smooth first weekend with Flo. Our broadcast, I felt, was really good and can only get better. They race in 2 weeks at Florence, South Carolina, on the 25th, which is my wife's birthday.
Dude, I hear the car counts are up. Things are thriving. And, we'll have more with Hannah Newhouse in the Short Track Insider segment on Thursday, which you'll be back in studio. And we're looking forward to having you back. To your point, the short track scene. I mean, I even noticed Bubba Pollard getting into it with somebody at Five Flags over the weekend. And that was a fun video to watch. So, yeah, I'm like really looking forward for Hannah to give us the next layer of information in these things that we notice on social media over the weekend.
Yeah, there's a lot happening out there in short track racing, and it's a lot of fun to pay attention to.
Yeah.
That's going to be a show. Appreciate everybody tuning in. Mike, thanks for letting me zoom in today. And, be with my family on vacation. We still wanted to reach out and talk to everybody this week. Tomorrow, a new series, Business in Motorsports, with my sister as the host. She has the president of 2311, Steve Laletta, is coming in to talk to Kelly about how they run their program. And it'll be fascinating to listen to those two discuss how to run a race team.
That's right.
And and then we'll be back in the studio on Thursday, like you mentioned. I can't wait to get home. Vacation has been fun, but nothing beats being in the dirt, the Bojangles studio, sitting there with you guys. So I'll see you Thursday.
See you Thursday. Those kids sound wide open in the background, so you need to go play with them.
Yeah, I hear them. It's their last day, so we're going to make the most of it. Everybody have a great week. We'll see you Thursday.
See you.
Check out Dirty Mo Media on Twitter, Facebook, TikTok, and Instagram.